everyone. Welcome. It's the We Watch Stuff podcast presented by Stunt Granny. Yes, there's a name for this show now. I'm Jeremy, and Shahid's with me, as always. Well, for the last two shows we've had, so I guess that's always, though.
Hey, always is always, and they say how long, so. Mm-hmm.
Although it's kind of a cop-out if it's always and it's only been one time.
It's not a lie, though.
Or no, it's not, but it's kind of misleading. It gives you the illusion of longevity, I suppose. Make it seem more important or long-lasting than you would expect. So,
well, this is the longest show without a name that has a name in the history of our world. So, uh-huh. How
about- I had to take a bite from my Domino's pizza I ran to get for $5.95.
I don't think that's an yoga diet plan, but I won't tell
it's anyone. Not. But you know what it is? It's in my stomach. That's all that matters right now. Man, advertising doesn't work on me. I mean, well, until they got rid of, like, cool toys for Happy Meals and, like, the glasses and stuff. But if you put a door hanger, like, if you're coming home from work where I don't eat much, I come home and I see a $5 pizza offer, that's hard to resist, man.
Yeah.
Just... especially if you can order online now. You don't even have to talk to the teenager behind the counter. Here's my name. It takes them 5 minutes to find it. I'm like, all right. As it gets colder and colder right before my eyes. Well, that's not what we're here to talk about, though. What we're here to talk about this week, we're going to start with X-Men, probably going to Transformers, even though, you know, the movie's not out yet. But in this society, you don't need the full product. All you need to see are clips of it to make a judgment.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, X-Men Days of Future Past, my friend, it came out. Huge box office. I couldn't tell if this one met the expectations or if it exceeded it. It made 302 over the four-day haul, because they included Thursday nights. It made $302 million worldwide.
I would say considering, well, I had a lot of hype behind it, but considering, you know, First Class opened up, I know domestically about what, was like 50, 53 million?
Yeah.
It's kind of like, you know, they had to deal with the stigma from The Last Stand and X-Men Origins, so they didn't expect it to do high, it did okay, but it was like gangbusters, but it lasted for a while. Yeah. So it's to almost close to double it.
Well, yeah. It cost opening weekend for First Class almost the same amount of time. It was June 3rd of last year, $55 million. And then it went on to gross $146. So in comparison, and that's U.S. only, excuse me. So in comparison, oh boy, I mean, that's quite a lot of money.
Yeah.
For one weekend when it looks like, if IMDb is correct, worldwide, it topped out at $353 million.
It'll pass that by, like, tomorrow.
If it hasn't already today.
Yeah.
Oh, no. I guess it... yeah, today's Tuesday, so yeah, that would make sense. But yeah, I agree with you, though. First Class, what an eight ball to be behind.
Yeah.
X-Men Last Stand and X-Men X-Men Origins Wolverine. The movie that effectively killed all the origin movies they had planned. That is impressive.
And not only that, it dealt with that, and it was basically, I don't want to say reboot, but it was more likely a reboot. You know, young Charles, it wasn't any superstars in that movie. Like, James McAvoy is an art star, but he wasn't big time. Fassbender wasn't big time like that, so it was a bunch of unknowns.
Yeah, Fassbender, as you pointed out to me yesterday, was in 300. And as soon as I went and looked it up, I was like, oh my God, that's right. That was him, wasn't it? What a total surprise. It was a character that was pretty essential to the movie. But all those guys look so incredibly different that just blended right in.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, the cast of First Class had nobody really. Kevin Bacon was the biggest star.
Because Jennifer Lawrence wasn't, I mean, she was known, but that was like pre-Hunger Games, so it wasn't anybody big.
Yeah.
I guess the two biggest stars would have been Kevin Bacon and McAvoy and what's-her-face from Mad Men.
Oh, January Jones.
Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah. I guess you can't get away from one movie without comparing it to the other. And the director's changed. Matthew Vaughn directed First Class and then dropped out of this to direct something else. I don't remember. And then Bryan Singer rolled back in and directed this. And you could tell the difference in tone. But it also, I guess it goes back to the X-Men Origins and Last Stand. That it affected First Class, but then it also fundamentally made them do another movie to essentially rip them out of continuity. Like, yeah, you guys paid your money to see these, and we apologize, we're not going to reference these anymore.
Well, like I said, blame Brett Ratner and blame Brett Ratner more than Gavin Hood, because from, like, you probably know the background to The Last Stand. It was basically supposed to be the Dark Phoenix saga. Mm-hmm. Singer went and did Superman Returns. Ratner put his greedy paws on it and just... It made a lot of money based on X2 and just the hype from it, but that movie was just a damn... Ugh.
See, I don't know if it's fair to blame Brett Ratner for everything, though. Because this was Fox, right? Yeah, Fox pushed that through so fast that even with all the problems that they were going to run into, they wanted it, and then they actually offered it to other directors, but no one wanted it because of all the time constraints.
I think Matthew Vaughn was offered that, and he said he did not have enough time to do it. But it's always fun to blame Brett Ratner. Like, he's a functional director.
Well, that's like saying you're a functional alcoholic, though. It's not good.
Well, I'd rather be a functional alcoholic than a non-functional alcoholic. But it's just too many, and it was the problem with The Last Stand is the problem that Days of Future Past avoided, and that was the biggest worry I had going to the movie. It was a lot of moving parts, but this movie didn't seem cluttered. The Last Stand, it was just clutter.
I remember watching it in the theater just going, this is shit. Everything about this is wrong. And the clutter part, though, it just seemed like they needed to knock things out for the sake of knocking it out. So it was just all these movable pieces. All right, we're just going to throw them all together and we'll figure it out as we go along, which they never did. Like, the entire Angel story made no sense. Actually, it made sense, but it wasn't necessary at all.
It's just wasted. Like, we got this cool character. Let's show him for the first 5 minutes, and let's show him for the last 2 minutes.
Yeah. Now, and again, guys, these are spoiler shows. Your own fault if you're still listening.
Spoiler alert!
Yes. Morning. Did you notice the names of the dead? I think it was it Magneto listed them? Or was it Mystique?
Oh,
No, it was Magneto. It was on the plane.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. He listed Banshee, which I was kind of disappointed they killed him off.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of a boring character, but the kid made it fun.
Yeah.
Azazel, whatever.
Emma Frost.
Did he say Emma's name?
Yeah, he said Emma. Said Angel.
That's the thing. Where was Angel? They weren't going to say the girl from First Class, I thought was supposed to be Pixie.
No, her name was like Angel Salvador, something like that. Like, she's a comic character. Like, she was kind of, I forgot her comic name, but I remember her, like I said.
I'm looking real quick. Raven Mystique, Young Raven in a black suit. Oh, and real quick, just because I ran across it, how adorable is Young Mystique? The little girl dressed up with a wig. Like, I don't really like kids, but if my kid looked like that, I'd keep her around. Like, look at this thing. This is my kid. This one's cool. As an aside, sorry. Angel Salvador. Okay, that makes more sense. All right. Because I was like, wait a minute, in their new continuity, they just killed off Warren Worthington? I was like, wait a second.
Yeah.
Okay, that makes sense. I don't really care about Zoe Kravitz, so whatever.
I like that because it's kind of took care of, how are we going to have two different storylines but have enough time for the important people? It's like, okay, they're not important. Bye.
Yeah.
They die off panel.
Yeah, and they did push off Havoc or Alex Summers off to the side for another movie if they wanted to. Because he was the blonde guy in the, I don't want to say POW camp, but the quarantine section.
The other guys in Vietnam, don't get around them. You might get that mutant flu.
Yeah, I like that. And that's what I was trying to figure out. One was clearly Leech.
And one was Toad.
Wait a minute. No, I'm sorry. I'm thinking of Toad. Where did I get Leech from? Anyways, who was the guy with the biohazard symbol?
Hell if I know. Right. It's too many mutants in the Marvel Universe. I can't keep up with all of them. I don't know if it's somebody from the comics or somebody just random mutant A or whatever. Or who knows?
Yeah, but I mean, he threw up. So, I mean, it made him sick. That's what I was, and I forgot to... Oh, is his name actually Bile? Wouldn't that be... If I nailed it right off the bat, that'd be pretty crazy. Anyways. But yeah, but I liked how they kind of set that up if they wanted to go with it. That, Magneto, near the end, they even show him, like, doing their little odd jobs. So that they wanted to, like, put X-Men, the original one, into the continuity now. That's where they could say, oh, well, we saw him and we just kind of gravitated towards him there. So I like that aspect of it. It was just little touches like that in the movie I liked. But I guess since we jumped in the middle, I guess we start at the beginning. I wasn't really familiar with X-Men. Like, I joined up in the early 90s. So okay. There were like five books, you know, X-Force, Uncanny X-Men. They created X-Men. What else was there? New Mutants, but they became X-Force.
And then X-Factor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's where I kind of hopped in. So I wasn't really familiar with Days of Future Past.
Okay.
I mean, I knew the story, and I knew there was like the iconic image of the Sentinel vaporizing Wolverine.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, all right. So obviously it's in the past, in the cover too, with... You know, Wolverine protecting Kitty Pryde in the past. And I knew it had something to do with Sentinels. And that's really all my knowledge was. So I had a pretty clean slate going into this.
Yeah, I came from, for once, we're on the opposite side of this. Because I'm a big time X. Like, I started probably reading around the same time you read it. But I did a lot of catching up. And X-Men is the reason why I read comic books. Like, that was the first comic book I read. That's my favorite comic book. And... Days of Future Past stood out so much because it was just so random. Like, it wasn't any lead up going to it. Like, it was like a regular story beforehand. Days of Future Past happened and then jumped to a regular story with foreshadowing.
It was only two issues of the original Uncanny X-Men. What was it? 141, 142, or... I just had it in front of me. 141 and 142 in 1981.
Yeah.
So, no, that's pretty cool. I don't know. Did watching a movie with the comics background make a difference?
I will say this. It made me realize, and I think not just this movie, but all the X-Men movies, I think X-Men is probably the most difficult comic to do a good movie adaptation to. Just considering all the moving parts, all the powers involved. And you can tell watching this one, and I watched the first X-Men. It came out, I guess, what, 99, 2000?
Yeah, something about that.
Yeah, and it's just, like, that one had a budget of $70 million, and you could tell. Like, it looked like it cost $70 million.
Yeah.
So, I mean, but at the same time, you know, it was still comics. Comic movies work, you know, what comic movies are now. And one of the main reasons they are now, because X-Men was a success.
Mm-hmm.
And this one, I think they say it was like Fox most expensive, like it's their biggest movie production ever. You can tell. Like, you can see the money involved in that. And
yes.
Because it's so knowing that, like, they changed a few things from the comic, and some people might complain, but it didn't fit necessarily the comic storyline. But it fit the movie storyline that was set through 14 years. So I didn't have too much of a problem with it, for the most part.
But isn't there a point, like, I try not to do this with the DC movies, but the few there have been that are any good. But DC's really gone out of their way, whether it be on accident, which is probably most likely, where they've really deviated from source material. And people complain like crazy. And it works with, like, the Dark Knight trilogy. It worked. And to a certain extent, they deviated. This new Man of Steel deviated. But whenever Marvel does it, especially with the X-Men movies, it always seems like it's a bigger deal than it should be.
Because it's a two-part thing, and this is part of my rant. I'm glad you went here. Because first of all, X-Men is probably the most polarizing movie franchise, and one of the reasons is because they basically, they just crap on, like, good example is the first X-Men. They basically turn Rogue into Kitty Pryde, more or less.
Yes.
And people had a hissy fit for more or less, and, you know, rightfully so and everything. But my complaint...
Why rightfully so?
Because it's like, it's other characters you can use. Like, you probably read around the same comic time I did, and a lot of people got the X-Men from the cartoon series. And you see Rogue as being like, you know, a grown-up powerhouse and Southern Belle and everything like that. Mm-hmm. Turned into, like, you know, a 14-year-old runaway. And it fits the story because you want to have... But people, their whole complaint is, if you want to go that route, why use Rogue? You can use Kitty Pryde. You can use Jubilee. They got a zillion teenage girls. So why use Rogue?
I did find that kind of weird... that was one of the problems I had with the first one, that I didn't understand why Rogue was a teenager all of a sudden. But I never put two and two together that it's supposed to be Kitty Pryde, but that does make more sense. So,
yeah. But what my complaint came in, it involves Wolverine, when they cast Hugh Jackman, who say, oh, it deviates from the storyline. Wolverine's supposed to be 5'3" and 210 pounds. Hugh Jackman's I'm like, you want Danny DeVito to be Wolverine?
The most popular one I ever heard was Glenn Danzig. Exactly. Okay, you gotta find someone that can act. So he can't. Just because he's short and gruff looking doesn't mean he could do the part. But anyways, sorry.
I lost my train of thought. No, because my whole issue, the reason it's such a big deal with the X-Men, and I think part of it is like Bryan Singer, he said himself, like, you know, before he did the movie, he wasn't really a fan of the comics. Like, he didn't read it that much. And he took the whole, you know, I take mutants as like gay thing. And you can see a lot of people said either it was like originally X-Men was kind of like a minority thing. And then he basically said, you know, being mutant is almost being gay. And I'm going to use that same, you know, allegory. Can't you not be a mutant? I'm coming out the closet and everything like that. And it, you know, it fits for the time more or less. But a lot of his choices, and Brett Ratner's worse at this, like, they didn't choose characters based on how they thought the character would be. They chose a lot of characters based on how, if they had a cool power or not. And that's, yeah. And to be fair, it's hard, and I'll use the perfect example before we go back to the movie. When they compare how they treat Wolverine and Cyclops, like the comic books has always been, you know, like Wolverine was popular, but Cyclops was always the leader and everything. And in the movies, you come off as being, you know, like dull and stuff. But there's no way to make Cyclops interesting in a 2-hour movie. And don't talk to me about, you know, following canon and following, you know, source material. Because source material, truth be told, Cyclops is an asshole.
Yeah, and especially nowadays in the comics. I mean, I don't read any Marvel stuff because I think the company's a mess on the comic side. Not that DC's getting any better, really. But I've seen some of the stuff where Cyclops basically started a war and...
Yeah.
He was a bad guy for a while, and I'm like, all right, well, I mean, as much as a bad guy you can get in X-Men comics, really. Everyone seems to have some sort of shade of gray, outside of Sabretooth, maybe.
Well, his shade was extremely gray.
Yeah.
Where you're coming from, but... Yeah. I mean, how could you explain to somebody, like, a quick aside before we go into the movie? He's married to Jean, Gene dies. He finds some girl that looks exactly like Gene. I'm going to go ahead and retire from X-Men, start a family. He finds out Gene is alive, kicks his girl and son to the curb, go back to the X-Men, has, you know, his relationship with Gene, has an affair with Gene, with Emma Frost, who had a part of Gene going insane and killing a couple galaxies. Gene dies and some convoluted storyline pushes Scott. Go ahead, move on, Emma Frost. He's making out with Emma Frost on his dead wife's gravestone.
Really? That's awesome. Good for him.
And they justify saying that's what Gene would want him to do. Now, come on now.
I know that didn't take place. I know that took place over years of stories. But to say it like that, that sounds like the coolest 2.5-hour superhero movie ever, though. I'd watch that in a heartbeat.
Yeah.
If X-Men, I can't even call it Origins, just X-Men, Cyclops, just 2.5 hours of him being a dick. That'd be great. Wow. Yeah. No, I knew about the stuff, because I got out of comics for about 4 or 5 years, because I just lost interest. Mm-hmm. And then got back in, and started picking up like some of the old trades, and I saw that Scott had started psychically having an affair with Emma Frost. Mm-hmm. And I was like, all right, at least that's an interesting twist on it.
He loves telepaths. I swear.
That kind of goes with the whole thing. It's like, well, just because I'm just thinking about it, not doing anything. But this is actually like I'm really thinking about it, but really kind of doing it if the other person's aware of it, even if there's no physical intimacy involved. So I thought that was just an interesting thing. Of course, Grant Morrison's the one that came up with it, so shouldn't have been that surprised. But yeah, no, I know what you mean with the Cyclops character in the movies. I always wanted him to do more.
Yeah.
I mean, X-Men 2, he was gone the entire movie.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's a casting thing, and we talked about with Marvel movies, and X-Men kind of lucked out when it came to casting for most of the parts, because Patrick Stewart is Charles Xavier. Like, it just, as soon as they picked him, it was like, I couldn't think of anybody else. Just getting in, Ian McKellen as Magneto, like, that. When I first thought that, like, he seems kind of old, you know, but it works, the dynamic works, because people describe, like, you know, X-Men is like, you know, Hamlet with superpowers, more or less, and that's, you know, theater actors do well with that. And, but, you know, of course, Hugh Jackman, you know, he was an unknown, but he's basically Wolverine now. But, you know, Cyclops is kind of on TV. Like, the movie is, I mean, it's a guy with glasses. He can't do too much. It's more like, I'm playing a straight man. Keep away from Gene, Logan, and blah, 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 whatever you say, Professor. Like, he can't crack jokes. He can't have levity. So, and you put him next to Wolverine and everything else going on, is he going to suffer.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I like the what was it? We brought this up, I think, the last show. The lack of Cyclops screen time. And then also in X-Men 3, they find his glasses and they go, well, must be dead. the greatest, well, we don't really know where to go with this. And we need to write the guy out. So he's dead. All right, bye. And no one questions it. It's just the best part of that, of X-Men 3. I guess getting back into, like, we were talking about the continuity stuff, and when I asked you about, like, the change from the comics and the movie. Now, yeah. I know in I always thought it was Day of Futures Past. It's actually Days of Future Past. That kind of tripped me up. You've got in the comic, and from my Wikipedia reading, it's actually Kitty Pryde that gets sent back in time.
Yeah.
I couldn't have imagined that story working with Kitty Pryde going back in time. At least not in the movies.
Yeah, because they basically, and they did a smart job of explaining it, you know, because one is like Wolverine is the linchpin of the franchise. He's been in all the movies. He's the most popular guy. Like, selling, you know, Ellen Page is cool, but Kitty Pryde doesn't have enough, you know, gravitas to be, like, she's going to be that linchpin throughout, important part of movies. It'd be out of nowhere.
Yeah, you know, let her run a $160 million movie?
Yeah.
No.
And not only that, you know, they explain, like, power-wise, because originally, you know, send Professor Xavier back. It's like, well, you can't handle it. Your body will fall apart. But Wolverines won't, so it works.
Yeah, I do. That was part of it I really enjoyed. They never explained how Charles Xavier's still alive. Because if at the end of X-Men 3, I guess his body was in, his conscious was in the body of another person.
But, I'm glad you brought that up. Not only that, I could see his body was in another person, but somehow it became the physical present. Like, what, he aged 40 years and broke his spine and got plastic surgery. He looked like Charles Xavier, and nobody's like, oh, how you doing, Chuck?
Mm-hmm. Well, at the end of X-Men, I'm sorry, not X-Men, at the end of The Wolverine, when they showed up, I was like, oh boy, they got some explaining to do. You know, when Professor X and Magneto show up, I mean, you gotta explain why they're together, you gotta explain how he was walking, wasn't he?
No,
he was in a chair, Like, basically how he's alive and how these two have mended fences. And then my mom texted me Friday of last week asking how Charles Xavier is still alive. And I texted her back going, I don't know. I haven't seen the movie yet. I was like, she goes, okay, they didn't explain it or we just missed it. It's my mom, so I kind of figured that, you know, it was just missed.
No. They didn't explain that. They didn't explain how Wolverine got metal claws from the time he's at the airport to Sentinel the Root, what, he had time to take an adamantium bath while the world was falling apart?
I guess you could, you know, you could always have a movie in between, not that they don't need to now, but it's also, he's with Magneto.
Yeah.
So, you know, that, you could, with your imagination, explain that one away.
Like, I didn't lose sleep too much over it, but I can see that's, but that's one of the type of things where, you know, the ninjas would have their stars out, start tossing, so.
Yeah. I'm trying to think what else. Well, Magneto, at least at the end of X3, starts showing he still had his powers. So that one's okay. I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm at a loss. And, you know, being in the future, you can do whatever you want, I guess. But yeah, but Kitty Pryde, you know, Ellen Page, they send Wolverine back, does his magic, of course, wakes up with a chick. Continuing the streak of Wolverine banging out at least somebody in every movie.
He's a pimp.
Coming close. Yeah.
On a quarter bed. No doubt.
And I like the beefcake. Like, here's one for the ladies. Hugh Jackman showing some ass. I'm like, you know, even at least kind of propped up, like, oh. And I'm like, that's for you. That's how they're getting you guys in the theater. And then they kind of went with a comic convention. He goes, I know how this is going to work out, so just let me leave. And, of course, didn't listen. And that was really only one of the only times Wolverine really did something.
Yeah, because they had a good conceit to it. You know, for once, he had to be, you know, the voice of reason. They said if he got too upset, he get thrown back into the future. So seeing Wolverine having to keep calm, it was, you know, it was different. And it kind of mixed it up, but you know, Hugh Jackman's played the role well enough that it works.
Mm-hmm.
It's just funny, like, you know, Wolverine being the voice of reason. Like, the few times they do in the comic, it's always funny. They had a couple cartoon episodes. It's like, this, you know, the Savage being Mr. Peace, more or less.
Yeah, see, I never watched the cartoon.
Oh.
I remember trying when I was little, and I hated the animation. And I just stopped watching it. I don't know. I was just picky.
Yeah, you were picky. And you were older than me, so that makes sense. I remember that was basically, you know, appointment watching that and Batman with the two cartoons.
Oh, yeah, Batman for sure.
So, and that's where a lot of people kind of, when they think of X-Men, they didn't read it. If they didn't get it from the comics, they got it from the cartoon, so.
Yeah, and that's crazy to me. I don't know. I don't know why. It just surprises me that the good reviews that cartoon got, I guess because it followed like a longer story, some continuity, that sort of stuff.
It was smart. It was like it was like one of the first. It was around that time, and we just jumped all over the place. It was around that time when cartoons start getting more adult, like Batman came out that time, Gargoyles came out around that same time. It fit the storylines, you know. It definitely fit, like, first time they did the whole Days of Futures Past, Dark Phoenix saga. A lot of the iconic storylines, for the most part, was emulated by the cartoon. The voice work was good. It matched, like, and. When I think of Wolverine, I think if you watch that cartoon, that's the first voice I think of. It's from that cartoon. And it was they used the same voice for the video games. Like, that's just Wolverine. Mm-hmm. So it fit. And it was cool. It wasn't like a lot of, you know, it was a night. Wolverine, they even made Cyclops seem cool.
Well, I guess in long form storytelling, you can. So, but I guess trying to get back to the movie. I guess the going back in time part, like in X-Men First Class, and I guess this is the only viable comparison because they're two completely different movies. I got more of a sense of being in the past and more of like having fun with the time period with First Class than I did with this one.
Yeah, I did too. But there's a reason behind it though.
Like I said, two completely different stories.
But not only in that. Tones. I mean, part of it was different stories, but time frame, like the 60s was more, you know, everything's cool, free love, it's groovy. Like, you know, Professor Xavier was basically like a pimp back in that movie, like picking up chicks and everything.
Yeah,
and,
that scene where they pick up Angel.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
Magneto was like basically mutant James Bond. Like he had swagger. And he was suave. And this time frame was more like, you know, 70s. Nixon, paranoia, Vietnam. So it had some more, not even with the whole movie storyline, just the time frame storylines. Like, you know, mutants might be at your door and we just lost a war. We can't lose another one. So it was like a more of like a cloud of like discontent.
That is one thing I'm going to look up. Now, where they seem to have some fun was in costumes. I'm looking up Bolivar Trask. And it was all right. Peter Dinklage is a fantastic actor. It doesn't matter that, you know, he's a little person, midget, whatever. But the choice of the glasses, mustache, and that hair was incredibly distracting. And I mean, there were people who, when they first showed him, openly started laughing.
You know what? It fit, and I was laughing too, but knowing the character, knowing the time frame, it just fits, because you just see this little man with this porn mustache and this goofy haircut and these goofy glasses, and he's probably got, you know, marginalized this whole time, and he's basically, you know, the most powerful man in the room.
I did like how, and it kind of thematically went kind of made sense, because you've got this little person with this immense power, but who's, you know, considered an outcast in popular society, who hates a bunch of people who are going to be outcasts in popular society because they're different from everybody else,
even though he's just like them.
Yeah, for the most part. Yeah, but I actually pulled up, you know, and basically if you look up Bolivar Trask, the very first picture is the Dinklage one of him like looking longingly off into space or something, and then you see like all these other versions of what Trask looks like, and it's like I don't get it. I don't understand, other than having a great actor in the role.
It was a little distracting because I'm like, it's, you know, I'm waiting for, you know, Jamie Lannister to show up, and I know he's done more movies than that, but
that's very fair though. The same thing. I'm like, no accent or anything, but really kind of the same smugness. So he really didn't have to go too far out of character or differentiate the characters that well. I don't know. He's got such a commanding presence for someone of that stature. I mean, he's in the room and he's the guy you're looking at for no other reason than his voice, mannerisms, everything is so convincing.
He's captivating.
Yeah. And The part where he walks in with all of the Vietnamese and Russian dignitaries and just goes in, I know we don't have a lot of time, blah, 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 gets right to it. This person who stands about 4 feet something just talked down all of these generals and pivotal military players of these countries in a matter of, 3 minutes. It was really impressive. I don't know. I like the writing of him. I like the fact that no one pointed out, why are we going to listen to you, little man? You know, they avoided all those tropes.
Yeah.
So that's actually one of those times where changing the character actually works. Because you went for best actor, not for the sake of having it be diverse or whatever else.
And that leads to another one and jumping in. And one of the arguments, one complaints when they did the casting was, you know, Avengers has Quicksilver. So then I guess a couple weeks later, we're going to have Quicksilver too. And it's like, oh, Fox is copying and blah, blah, blah. And how's it going to fit? He fit. And that's probably one of the best portrayals of, super speed I've seen on movies and TV. And the character fit. I missed when he left the movie. I was sad because it fit the role. He fit the role,
right?
And I liked how of course that scene. I jump into the bank. The scene when they break out Magneto. He says that was a beautiful shot. That's the first thing I was watching because I saw it on 3D. I'm like, that's a beautiful scene. And it wasn't muddled. It wasn't cluttered. Everything breathed. You could take it all in. And it was just, they made sense. When he grabbed Magneto's neck, what's this for? It's so you don't get whiplash. I never thought of that, but it makes sense.
Yes, in that part, yeah. You don't think of that sort of stuff. With the Flash, I don't think that's ever been handled that way. and there's always the nerd argument, who's faster, but whatever. Did you notice the small things? The small Easter eggs with Quicksilver?
I noticed when that little quick conversation at the side when, you control metal. My mom knew a guy like that. Yeah. Just a little twinkle in his eye. You looked at me and he had a little twinkle in his eye for maybe 2-3 seconds.
Yeah.
And they didn't go. That's all they had to do. And it's like, okay.
Okay, but then did you notice at the end when Magneto was on TV that Quicksilver had a little red-haired girl sitting in his lap?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the other thing. And I was like, that's pretty cool, because it doesn't have to turn into anything.
Mm-hmm. But it can if they need it to.
Yeah, but it's... Or it's just one of those things you just kind of throw out there. You don't have to make these money for the comics loyalists. But if you give them a little bit of a shout-out, then everything's like, oh my god, did you see that sort of stuff?
Yeah, exactly. I'd rather they do it that way than to just shoehorn it and fuck it up like they did with the last stand. We got this random character. They don't have any storyline. Let's call him Psylocke because she was in the comics.
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
No. Yeah. How about you don't do that? How about no?
I'm trying to think. Yeah, and they made an issue of putting different X-Men names on screens and all that sort of stuff, which they really didn't do too much in this one.
Yeah.
But there's always something, which is, again, it's not that they have to turn in anything. It's just kind of fun. Because I just remember, I think it was Last Stand, they had Sam and Paige Guthrie on one of the video screens. And I was like, cool, Cannonball and his sister Paige, because I don't think she ever had a name. If she did, I don't remember it now. So,
Husk.
Was she Husk? Oh my God, she was. That's right.
I can't remember that because I.
What a terrible name.
Yeah. So, but I think the best thing they did, and it's it's funny. I don't think it's coincidence that both versions of Xavier and both versions of Magneto were played by foreign actors, more or less, because those type of roles, it seemed like they just do better playing those roles, because McAvoy and Fassbender, it was a three-man movie, and it was that whole relationship between those two and Wolverine being a mediator is kind of, until, I want to say, two-thirds of the movie, I was kind of I like to see how you couldn't really pick which side to pick. It was more like you lean toward more Magneto. You know, he's trying to save, you know, President Kennedy, who happens to be a mutant. Like, how about that?
Okay, that's something that just seems shoehorned.
Oh,
really? I'm like, okay, look, Men in Black did that stuff.
What?
You know, and I'm like, well, Kennedy was a mutant. I'm like, why? Because he wanted black people to have equal rights?
It kind of fit. You know why I didn't complain too much? Because you hear all the stories about, you know, what really happened. Was there a second shooter? How can a bullet curve? And blah, blah, blah. Well, there you go. How can a bullet curve? Because Magneto tried to curve.
Yeah. See, I didn't mind that. It was the JFK being a mutant part. And I was just like, okay.
He was a Catholic with a bad back banging girls and liked black people in the 60s.
Well, you know, when you put it, well, the only thing is, like, he likes black people in the 60s. I mean, a Catholic banging out girls behind his women's
that was a big deal back then.
Yeah. I don't know. It just seemed like very Men in Black-ish to me. Like, Lady Gaga's an alien? Oh my god, I'm so surprised. I'm trying to think. You corrected me on the Sunfire. Although
they all look alike.
I know it was Sunspot, but
it's funny. The guy that played was Mexican. He doesn't look Latin enough.
Yeah, no, he didn't. But then I was also confused. I was also just annoyed that I got it wrong. So I was like, whatever. But it confused me because Sunspot in the comics, when I read it, was black. And I don't mean, like, African-American. I mean he was pitch black. And it never occurred to me that, I forgot, actually. He didn't always look like that. It wasn't until later.
Mm-hmm.
So part of me really kind of wants to see that, though. Because he always had a cool look about him. But, man, what are you going to do?
Yeah, and it's funny we jump back. How they handle, like, you know, it was more a time travel thing, but they didn't spend too much time in the future. They didn't spend enough to set the storyline. Mm-hmm. And you cared more about the new characters than the old ones. Like, you know, Colossus was there, but he was just there to get killed two or three times. You know, Iceman had the, you know, grown up bear to try, you know, butch up. And he was there, you know, be support and die. I was paying more attention to, you know, like Bishop and, you know, Blink. I didn't realize how old that character was. I kept thinking like she was new and it's going there. And she's been around like as a full time character for 14, 15 years.
Wow, really?
And she made an appearance in like 93. And she made another appearance like 95, 96. And then since like 99, 2000, she's been in the comic books. And that made me feel very old, realizing, like, damn, that's a long time.
Yeah. Well, and that was part of when you were talking about how much money they put in this movie. Those scenes of her opening different warp windows, I don't know what they'd be called. Mm-hmm. That was beautiful. Those were seamless shots. Open, close, guys jumping all over the place. I was like, wow. And of course it's fake, but it didn't look like CGI.
Yeah, and this where, you know, I kind of, that's the beauty of CGI. Like, there's no way to do certain movies you can do practical. Like Batman, I mean, he's just a guy riding around in the car, he's doing karate. So you have to do a whole bunch of CGI. There's no way to do X-Men and have it do justice without using computers. It'll look stupid.
Mm-hmm.
But I can tell, like, I think I looked up the budget, like $200 million. And every single cent is on that screen. Like, those scenes, you know it's fake because you know you can't do it in real life. But not one time I was like, look at that CGI. I was just like, this is a beautiful movie. Like, the action is just shot awesome. And it looks awesome. And it just moves like, you know, I'm not paying it. And the last time I seen, like, the Avengers was good with that. But like you point out with Captain America and other movies, like, you notice, you know, you get CGI'd out to a certain extent. And I never felt that way watching this movie.
Hey, I'm glad you pointed that out, because you know what? I didn't notice it. So, yeah, I didn't get CGI'd out either. Even you know, as we just pointed out, as unrealistic as that action is, yeah, at no time did I feel just overwhelmed.
Yeah, and I think part of it was because they limit the action. It wasn't really an action movie. It had, you know, three action set piece, and the rest of it was, you know, talking drama. But since you had the actors to pull it off, no problem.
Yeah. I know we were talking about Quicksilver before we got off on another tangent, but I guess one of the, if there was a logic problem in this, I didn't understand why they just said, all right, thanks for all your help. We'll see you later. The dude clearly wants to get into some stuff, so keep him around.
Yeah, I didn't get that either.
But I also wonder if, for the sake of plot, if it would have made the action too easy after that.
Yeah, because it kind of been, well, I think they had, if you had somebody that fast and that talented, it probably would have eliminated a lot of problems they ran into. So it kind of takes, you know, it was almost like a cheat code, more or less.
Yes. And,
so.
Yeah, I enjoyed him. I like the fact everyone keeps calling him hipster Quicksilver. It's like, all right, well, he's not going to be the asshole he grows up to be.
Yeah, he had a little bit of it, but it was more like good nature. He wasn't like, you know, dickhead Quicksilver from the comic books.
Yeah, who is far, far more interesting, though. I don't know. Could you imagine the team of, like, just all the asshole X-Men characters? Like, just straight up, not even evil.
Just asshole. Yeah. Wolverine, Cyclops, Bishop. There's a bunch of evil. Ugh.
Yeah. That actually might be interesting. I don't know. To see the dynamics of them trying to get along. But anyways. Yeah, it just kind of made it kind of moot. Like, well, I don't know why Quicksilver's in this, but I don't know any other fast X-Men. So, you know.
That's really just him, like, speed-wise, so.
Yeah. I think some people in the theater, for whatever reason, thought they were going to introduce Nightcrawler again. And I'm like, that doesn't make any sense. Because I heard someone whisper Nightcrawler. I'm like, no, he's not in this.
Yeah.
But he also made such a great impression in X2.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but overall, I liked what it did. It gave Fox it was a good movie. You know, you're always going to find plot holes in time travel movies and superhero movies. That's just the way they work. And they limited them for the most part in this. But they also, they the way it ended. And you understood the ending, right?
What do you mean?
Okay, this is the big spoiler alert. When Wolverine wakes up, he's back at the mansion, and they gave all the comics guys the little wink and a nod. You noticed Colossus and Kitty Pryde were together.
Yeah.
Well, that's a comics thing. Mm. You know, they showed Rogue, whose part got cut out in the beginning of the movie.
Yeah.
It actually, you know, and Bryan Singer said that scene didn't work, which is why they cut it out. And it'll be back on the director's cut, and that's fine. But it kind of set you up for everything else. Because as Wolverine, you know, wakes up, he's walking through, and he sees Storm. And I don't remember the exact order, but...
He sees Beast, like, and Kelsey Grammer.
Yes.
Little cameo.
That was cool.
I like that, too.
So I saw them. And then you see Rogue, which I guess she'll still have her powers.
More or less, yeah, because I'm guessing that's pre, you know, Last Stand, so she would have her powers.
Yeah, it sounds, well, to me it looks like X2 doesn't exist anymore either. Because Jean's still alive, and Scott is still alive, which was me audibly going, nice.
Yeah, and I like how they played it, because, you know, you see Jean, and what's Wolverine's first thing? I'm like, oh, Gene here. No, I'm getting my Mac on.
Yep, I'm getting back in those drawers, which he never did actually. But you know, but still,
can we talk about that for a second? I can understand that whole storyline in the comic books, but in the movie, doesn't Wolverine seem kind of like stalkerish? Like he just been burning his torch for Gene, and did they even kiss?
At the end of X3, they did when he kills her.
But the whole time was like, oh, Jean is my one true love, and I can't live without Jean. I'm like, okay.
That was a, okay, that's an X3 problem, because at the end of X2, it's very clear. You know, there's Scott's got the thing for Logan steps aside because, you know, she chose Scott. So, you know, but then X3, they erase it all. The Wolverine, it's him pining over some chick that he didn't even get the first base with. Sorry. We're all modern men now. I'm not pining over any chick I haven't tagged. There's no chance.
And so many chicks Wolverine has tagged. He's been around for a long time, and you made it clear every movie he's boning somebody.
Every movie he's either gotten some, or a chick has totally fallen in love with him. Every single movie. And in some cases, two chicks in a movie. But yeah, it didn't make any sense. There wasn't like any sort of genetic predisposition to each other or any of that stuff. So yeah, your stalker example is perfect. But yeah, I did at the end, though, the way they shot it, you knew Scott was going to be alive.
Mm-hmm.
And at least, you know, I figured he was going to be. And he was like, Jean, he goes to reach for her, and all of a sudden that hand grabs her. I was like, nice.
Like, what are you doing, pal?
Yeah, it was great.
And then they kind of play, you know, Professor Xavier's like, you know, what's going on? And then he drops that line, you know, we got a lot to talk about. And then it clicks, like, okay.
I just like the whole part where he goes, welcome back, or what is it, welcome home?
Back. Yeah, welcome home, or welcome back, one of them.
Yeah, it was like, okay. There are people that are confused by the ending. I don't understand. It's like, well, how is he still alive? Because everything changed. That's how he's still alive.
And you notice why people come. You remember when you talk, what movie, you talk about how, oh, you were talking about Spider-Man last week, and you saying how they had arrows pointing, pay attention to this, because this may happen, and you didn't know why. Well, now you know why.
Mm-hmm.
It's not for us, it's for them. So, there you go.
Yeah. And there was, well, I don't know, in the middle of the X-Men, but I'll save it for the end, I guess. There was just a missed opportunity in Spider-Man 2, which probably pissed people off, but there was a big missed opportunity, and it had something to do with the ending. Like, this little kid, he helps him in the beginning of the movie. It's a little white kid. And then the little white kid dresses up as Spider-Man at the end to stop Rhino.
Mm-hmm.
And this most acid, it's the worst fucking end to a superhero movie ever. Then the real Spider-Man shows up. He goes, I'll take it from here. Because Rhino's like, oh, Spider-Man's going to beat me. And his weird accent. And I was thinking, you know how, like, this Andrew Garfield, like, they always talk about burning out audiences on Spider-Man. Well, they have a brand new Spider-Man named, is it Miles Morales, correct?
Half black, half Latin.
Okay. Wait, he's half Hispanic, right?
Oh.
Okay. Why not make that little kid Miles Morales?
Because we ain't having no colored Spider-Man, Jeremy Mays. It's 2014. It ain't 2034. The world ain't ready for it. That's why. Because somebody brought up and asked. Because Andrew Garfield brought up an interview. Like, you know, it'd be cool after I do my movies. We can have Miles Morales because Spider-Man is not about the person. It's about the idea.
Oh, did he really?
Yeah.
Oh, and, I didn't know that.
Okay. And producers heard that. He's like, nah, he's not taking that route.
It's idiotic. It's...
And it goes toward X-Men. I'm glad you took that path because it goes toward X-Men and is one of the complaints people had about the movies. Like, X-Men comics have all been about, you know, diversities and minority. The movie, especially the last few ones, have basically been, you know, Jennifer Lawrence and a bunch of white guys saving the world,
mm-hmm.
more or less. And it's kind of like, you know, X3, I remember somebody pointed up, it was like, you got Storm and the Lily White X-Men and all the minorities are villains. On, you know, Magneto's team, more or less. And then, you know, First Class, they, you know, it's kind of a pale look, and the black guy dies, and Zoe Kravitz changes sides. So,
yeah, that I noticed that right away. Was it Girder? No, not Girder. What was his name?
Darwin.
Yeah, he immediately dies. I just remember watching it with Elise going, the black guy dies? I was like, are they seriously going to do this? if they all would have just turned to the camera and gave a big wink, then I would have been like, all right, that's cool, you know, whatever. But
yeah, so
but it's also the 60s, so these characters, to be honest, Darwin shouldn't even have been there. Mm-hmm. I mean, if we're going to play with the way like these things were written, if you're going to stick to the continuity of it, with the comics, mm-hmm. there weren't any black guys. They had, what was his name, Thunderbird?
Yeah, they didn't start getting people, like, non-WASP people till the 70s, when people start complaining, like, how could X-Men be representing diversity, and you got 5 white people? So now all of a sudden you get Storm.
Because it was a better and safer America back then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You can't even say that with a straight face.
but no. We just live in such a different time, and we went back and forth on Facebook about that one thing. How I can't wrap my head around it. But I'm also, maybe I'm not like everybody else. I don't know. But it just, I don't care what the guy looks like or does, or girl, whatever. As long as it's good. And yeah. As long as it's not like, as long as things aren't just added for the sake of adding, which is what Darwin honestly seemed like, especially when they killed him off.
Yeah, like that whole, and that was my one thing that's the one thing I didn't like about First Class, and it goes to the whole, we choose people based on powers. The cast, like the characters didn't make sense, like all the new, I guess they didn't want to use the original X-Men, but you getting, how many people heard of Angel Salvador? Like Darwin is fairly new, and if you read his comics, he's like one of the most powerful mutants, like in Marvelverse, and you just throw him in there, he swallows a Super Mario fireball and blows up. you got Banshee. Like, it's just, we take somebody from the 70s, the 80s, somebody from 2000s, and just throw them together. Like, X-Men, you heard of Banshee and Havoc. Most people didn't hear the rest of these Jokers in this.
Well, I know Ziesel was apparently laughed at. Like when he was in the comics, people just hated him immediately because it was like a red Nightcrawler ripoff.
Mm-hmm. And he justified, like, oh, that's Nightcrawler's dad.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But, and then, who was the other guy that did the tornadoes? I can't even remember his name. It's kind of, you get the Hellfire Club and you have 2 members and a bunch of, jobbers. So.
I'm looking up the cast of it. I don't remember.
I think it was like Whiplash or...
No, Whiplash is an Avengers person.
It was something.
Riptide.
Riptide, yeah. He was like a marauder or something.
That's
but
a G.I. Joe name. That's not an X-Men name. Oh my God.
He's a villain from... He's either like, I think, a Mr. Sinister villain or something. He's an X-Men villain, but it's more, the argument that we'll choose people because the powers are cool, not because it fits. And that's one thing where that's my only complaint about First Class was of the characters, but whatever.
Yeah.
So what did you think about how much, and it made, of course, because Jennifer Lawrence, how important Mystique was to the story?
They've always seemed to make Mystique a main character in these movies. So to her having that much screen time, and it also gave you, I didn't mind, I guess, because it gave you a different perspective of stuff. And plus, by having her be the linchpin for everything, the way she can create, the way she can mimic the way people look and smell and apparently their fingerprints and everything, she's an easy plot device. It also saves on the budget, if you think about it, mm-hmm. by just putting somebody else with no name on there. I don't know. I didn't really mind. I just figured it was part of the movie.
I didn't either. And Jennifer Lawrence, and she can act. It fits the story. But I know a lot of people had complaints. Their main thing was, oh, Days of Future Past, they turn into, the Hugh Jackman, Jennifer Lawrence show, more or less.
I guess.
But one, it fits the universe they built. And then two, and it's going to go in my right, it's Hugh Jackman and Jennifer Lawrence. So, if you have stars, you use stars. And if it fits, it fits. So, what's the problem?
See, I actually don't agree with that, though. I'm sorry, that it was the Hugh Jackman and Jennifer Lawrence show. McAvoy and Fassbender were in it almost as much.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you too, but that would be my counterpoint to ones, because I didn't think it was just those two, but if you thought it was those two, I'm like, so what? Even if you did, yeah, and, but no, it was basically like a romance movie, you know, more or less.
Yeah.
You know, and like James McAvoy, you took my girl, and I'm just going to get a dope, I got my legs being doped up because I don't want to live, you snatched my chick more or less. And Magneto was like, you know, you need to get your head out your ass. Stuff's going on. All these people dying. And you worry about your legs. So it kind of led you toward, you know, Magneto's side. But I will say this. And one of the reasons I love Magneto, like, he's always been played like, you know, the Malcolm X of the X-Men comics and stuff. And a tragic figure. But he's a villain deep down. He'll always do something stupid. And what's the first? He'll do something, you know. He'll sacrifice you in jumpsuit. What's the first thing they explain the storyline? Well, they want to catch a Mystique so they can build the Sentinels and be indestructible. What's the first thing he thinks to do? Well, I'm going to kill Mystique.
Yeah, the girl I was trying to get in her pants too, and, you know, get her to be all she can be. Now I'm going to get rid of her first.
Within 5 seconds, explain the story. It's like, hey, by any means necessary.
Well, that was what cracked me up, is they save him, tell him the plan, and you're okay. And not more than, well, it was the very first mission, he goes off track. Mm-hmm. It's like, no one saw this coming, right? You know, the guy that can't be trusted ever? Yeah, it kind of goes like the stupidity of the good guys, and no matter what forum or medium it's in, it'll be wrestling, comics, TV.
I mean, like, Wolverine knew, but it's like, you know, I got to get a benefit of doubt because maybe it'd be different back then. But he knew what was going on. And, you know, and then Professor X didn't have his mental powers, so he couldn't read the mind. And they say, I won't want to go in your mind anyway because you stole my girl and blah, blah, blah. But at the end of the day, Magneto's going to do what he does, what he thinks is best. So he'll play the good guy. And the same way with the comics. Like, he's been the good guy before, and he'll do it, and he'll do it well. When push come to shove, I'm going to handle business my way.
Regardless of what you guys want me to do. I didn't... All right. If there is one valid, at least I think it is valid, problem, and we're going to have to wrap up here. We'll get the Transformers some other day. He takes the metal from the railroad,
mm-hmm.
splices it into the Sentinels, into the machines, into the circuitry and all that.
Mm-hmm.
How the hell is he turning them on and off?
He is the master of magnetism.
Okay, see, that's electricity. That's different.
He on and off switch with a magnet. And I was thinking that too, but he's done that enough in the comic books where it's kind of like, whatever. Because it didn't make any sense. Like, his control is that good that he can splice into the circuitry and just override the programming and control it by thought.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, he's had 10 years, and then you see him lift up a damn football stadium without breaking a sweat. So,
which was absolutely unnecessary for the movie, but very cool to watch.
It fit them. You know what? And I was wondering, like, okay, this scene is like, okay, shows off how powerful Wolverine is. I mean, how powerful Magneto is. And now it makes sense in the trailer. Why do you do it? Then when he closed it around, what was it, the Pentagon? And like, so nobody can get in.
No, around the White House.
The White House. So nobody can drive in. And he's got the air cover with the sound. Like, okay, that's why he did it. I'm sure it was an easier way to do that. But, you know, Magneto's all about grand entrances.
Yeah,
so.
Well, true. And people did point out from those little blogs, whatever I read, that at least in this one, Magneto picked up a stadium to create a barrier. Unlike X-Men Last Stand, where he tore up the Golden Gate Bridge to create a bridge.
A moving bridge.
But yeah, and also a bridge that apparently changes the amount of hours and time in a day. So, you know, when you pick up the bridge, when you put it down, it's suddenly nighttime.
That's a long-ass trip.
Oh, I know. That mile. Ugh. I had it with that movie by then. And when it changed the night, there were only – I knew we were in for a rough one because when I saw X-Men Last Stand, it was opening weekend. There were 5 people in the theater.
Oh, when I saw
it. And that's fair game.
Yeah.
And when that happened, I was like, this is shit. I was like, let's go. We got to stop this. And then stayed for the credits.
Ugh. You know, when I saw it, it was actually a full house because people were excited, you know, oh, X2 and everything, and you're going to have new villains, blah, 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 and Kelsey Grammer. And then it just kept going downhill and more downhill. And then it was somebody that explained it. They were like, okay, so you have this cure that can, you know, take away mutant powers. They use it on Magneto. Couldn't Wolverine just use it on Jean? He has to stab her.
Didn't he try to use... No, they tried to use the remaining honor, and she destroyed it all.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because remember they tried firing it. She stopped them all and just disintegrated them and the guys who shot it.
He still put one in his pocket. But, okay, I mean, if you use that, that makes sense. But that always bothered me because people used to ask, why didn't you just do that? And I'm like... It's true love there. I don't know.
Yeah, true. Oh, fuck. No, we're not going. Sorry. We're not going back to that.
Before we wrap up, now you asked me about my rant. Mm-hmm. And this is how it came. Because they asked me, oh, what do I think about the movie? Well, you know, I enjoyed the movie. It was a great movie and blah, 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 this and this. And then the other thing was, you know, well, I liked the movie. And then they spent the next 5 minutes saying everything that was wrong with it. But they say, you know, and I'm looking for, I can't wait to see X-Men Apocalypse. And I'm like, you know, well, I'm curious to see it, but that's 2 years from now. I'm going to enjoy this movie. Oh, you can't enjoy it as a standalone movie because they build a universe and da 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 da. And for whatever reason, I just lost it. And I was like, look, he can put a scene with some guy in a blue face and four horsemen in there and people chanting for a pyramid. That's 2 years from now. Bryan Singer might be in jail 2 years from now. Like, you never know what may happen 2 years from now. When it's 2016, I'll worry about that. And I blame, and it's a lot of factors, I blame that Marvel started it and everybody's following it and this Netflix thing where you can't appreciate a movie for what it is by itself. It's always got to be, well, you know, how does it fit pushing the movie? And like, it just came out, you're talking about the next movie. And I understand, like, the movies behind it built a story for this movie, and this one's built for the next one. When I paid my money, I didn't see all seven movies. I watched this movie. Let me appreciate this movie. I'm not watching a TV series. Because even when you have TV series and, you know, you watch a season as a whole and everything builds together, and we've talked about it with Game of Thrones and everything, if an episode is weak, an episode is weak. And you judge that episode based on what it is. You don't say the whole series sucked because of that episode. You don't say the season sucks because of the episode. But you're allowed to just comment the episode by itself. And that's a TV show. But this whole movie thing is like, we can't appreciate something for what it is. And it's always got to be, oh, how's it linked to the other things? And all this stuff. And they would complain, well, I didn't like how they basically said the X-Men before didn't count. And they had a convoluted storyline from First Class. And they were talking about X3 and X-Men. Well, I'm like, okay. Well, what did you think about this movie? Oh, well, let me tell you about how it builds up. I'm like, no. What about this one? And it just goes, and I can see where it came from because Marvel started that, and we talked about, you know, before the Avengers came, you knew it was built toward the Avengers, but you could appreciate Thor for what it was, Iron Man, and Captain America. Soon as the Avengers came out, now, whenever you watch a Marvel movie, it's like, oh, Iron Man 3 happens. Where's Captain America to say, why is the Mandarin is this terrorist blowing up stuff in the United States? Where's Captain America? Thor comes out, you know, and they're in wherever, London, something. Where's Iron Man? You know, is he off planet? Like, every question now about where the Avengers at? Or where is this at? And you can't appreciate the movie for what it is. You always wonder about how's it linked to the movies beforehand and how's it linked to the movies the other hand. And it's just, watch the damn movie you're watching for what it is. Just.
Well, like, see, I agreed with you up until the Captain America Thor stuff.
I mean, I can see where it comes from because it makes sense. Like, you know, you built the fact that this is a team and when something's jumping off, the team gets together. Mm-hmm. If you got some dark elf talking about they're going to eliminate seven universes, I think that qualifies something jumping off. So now I got to wonder, well, you know, is Tony Stark banging somebody? Is he developing something? And then even with the last Captain America movie, they dropped Iron Man's name. he built, you know, he helped build these new helicarriers. He was involved to improve them. So when something's going on, I can see Thor being off planet. I can see Hulk being Hulk. But, you know, you got Black Widow. Iron Man's not going to show up. So that part I see. But I hate the fact that I got to think that way.
But I guess in those cases, I think Captain America tried to cover some of it.
Mm-hmm.
The other ones just said, "Dave, what the fuck ever." I don't think anyone expected him to see anyone to see the second Thor.
Well, Iron Man 3, they were like, "Well, you know, this is our fight. This is my fight." Oh. That was his line.
If you want to point out the problems of Iron Man 3, we can do another podcast on that one.
I didn't have a problem.
That was the least of it.
Yeah, but in general, it's just too many times. And if you don't focus on the movie you have at hand, and you so much worry about universe building, look what happened with Green Lantern. That was supposed to be the setup. Oh, this is going to be the jump off the Justice League, and we're going to go here, and we're going to drop this. And you didn't focus on making a good Green Lantern movie, so now you have to take a Superman sequel, and instead of it being Batman versus Superman, it's going to be, well, this is a jump off the Justice League. Like, this movie that's coming out next year is a setup for the next movie. Marvel can get away with that because they have an organic universe. Everybody's trying to shoehorn stuff. It's like, let me watch the movie I'm watching. Get that right first.
Yeah.
And then let's jump to the next one.
Yeah.
Like, if you went out with a date before we go, if you went on a date with a girl, and after the date, she's like, well, how was the date? Well, I had a great date. But let me tell you what's wrong. I think, you know, you could have changed the shoes, and I didn't really like your haircut. But, you know, we can fix that for the next 3 dates when we go out. And I had issues with the date I had with the other girl. There's not going to be a second damn date. So.
You know what? After all of that, that's the perfect example. If you don't get it right on the first one, don't worry about making changes for the second.
Exactly.
Yep. Oh, boy. All right. Okay. We can continue this because the thing that came to mind through that was the Matrix movies. And we'll leave it there.
Yeah.
So we'll be back next week. I don't know what we'll talk about. Probably some of this again.
Yeah, we can probably talk about Transformers and while we're on different divides of that church. So.
Yeah. So especially we're on a far divide now after watching that last preview. So I'm going to get going. Thanks for listening to the very first We Watch Stuff podcast here on Stunt Granny. I'm Jeremy. I'm signing out. Just if you listen to the other shows, you know the plugs. I don't feel like doing them today. Later, guys.
Okay, peace out.